Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Warren, Michigan, and earned a BA in Business, Materials, and Logistics Management from Michigan State University. A quintessential entrepreneur, he's the founder and president of CIA Inc. and founder and chief technology officer of AGM Automotive. And since 2018, he's been the CEO of Apex Corporation, which creates high-end lighting products that redefine the language that lighting speaks. A survivor of an extremely rare form of cancer, his name, Bob Granata. And I'm Jack Crisul, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. I'm Jack Crisula. This is Anything Is Possible. And we're talking to Bob Granata. And since 2018, he's been the CEO of Apex Corporation. Bob, welcome. An honor to have you.
Good morning, Jack. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with talking about your childhood, your mom and your dad, please.
Yeah, well, so actually, I think I mentioned just this past weekend, I celebrated my 57th birthday. And I was raised for my life in, I was raised in Warren, Michigan. And actually, both my father and mother were barbers. My father was a barber as long as I can remember. And my mother went into beauty school. So we probably had the shortest hair of anyone in the school, because we were always getting haircuts. But we, I was able to grow up in a very, very modest lifestyle. You know, this 900 square foot home in Warren, 3-bedroom, 1-bath home, and really never looked back. It's been a great experience. I'd probably change nothing.
What's the biggest thing, Bob, you learned from mom? And what's the biggest thing you learned from dad?
Well, you know, in the case of my father, which God rest his soul, he's passed away now. When he was 65, you know, he's a son of an immigrant, Italian immigrant, actually Sicilian immigrant, and you know, when they all came over to the U.S., you know, they had a lot of perseverance, and so my father, he went to the military as he grew up, and he had the pleasure of eating really good Italian food, because my grandfather was also a caterer, a UAW member, and he actually worked with Briggs. But what I found was in my family was there's a lot of perseverance to succeed and take care of the family. You know, my father had at any one time 2 to 3 jobs to put food on the table for us, and as did my grandfather.
And the biggest thing you learned from mom?
I probably was mostly compassion. You know, my mother was very compassionate, hardworking, very loyal mother. In most cases, probably back then, probably more prevalent than today, but she was probably mostly the disciplinarian. And we always knew that if we got the word that wait till your father gets home, we were probably in big trouble. So she handled it up to a certain extent. And then if we knew we would push a little bit further, my dad would get involved. So we made sure that didn't happen.
Did you have any business experience as a kid growing up?
Well, I think it was always, I probably started out very early from the days of, you know, the first snow when you threw the shovel over your shoulder and went around, and you carried that through the spring into cutting lawns, paper routes, restaurant business, worked in the dormitories at Michigan State University in restaurants. Actually, I was going to go to school to be a hotel restaurant manager. And decided instead to go into materials and logistics management. But in most cases, more of an entrepreneurial spirit, I would say.
All right. You graduated, as you said, from Michigan State in business, materials, and logistics management. And in 1998, you founded CIA Inc., which you sold, I believe, in 2018. Talk about CIA Inc., please.
Yeah, so CIA was a company I formed. Stands for Commercial Imports and Assembly. I started answering the phone, originally CIA, and a lot of people were hanging up on me because they thought they were calling the CIA. So I started answering the phone, Commercial Imports and Assembly. And it was mainly because of the I developed a couple patented products, magnetic fasteners for the automotive industry. And we were using magnetics in the use to fasten interior trim in the vehicle. With that, we ended up, most of the ores required for magnetic fastening were actually mined in the Far East. So it kind of brought me to the Far East to secure relationships and supply, mostly in China because of the mining they had going on there, to make what we call a neodymium magnet, a very strong magnet that was attached to a medium used to attach trim in the vehicle.
Most fledgling companies, especially from a new entrepreneur, don't make it, Bob. What were the couple of keys that made CIA Inc. successful?
Well, it was a matter of, for me, it was identifying a need and fulfilling it. You know, at the time I developed the magnetic fastening concept, most of the times we saw in vehicles, let's say, for example, the headliner above your head, we saw a lot of screws being used, a lot of push pins, a lot of visible fasteners. Also, we started putting more weight on the headliner. So duct work, more lighting, screens for your children to watch television while they're driving. So we needed to develop something that was not so visible or wasn't visible, what's called a blind fastener. And to, number one, help for sag, so the headliner didn't sag, but also allow the assembly workers to assemble without having to drive a screw or push, get in a vehicle and drive a push pin. So we use the magnets on the B side, the inside, and we use the magnets actually attached to the sheet metal.
We're talking to Bob Granata. When we come back, we're going to talk to him about another company that he founded, AGM Automotive. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula. We're with Bob Granata. And in 2001, he founded and became the chief technical officer of AGM Automotive, which you then sold in, I believe, 2015. Talk about AGM Automotive, please.
Yeah, AGM was actually a spinoff of the earlier venture, Commercial Imports and Assembly. I ended up meeting some very good people in Asia early on, and they were actually making some of the product for me for the Commercial Imports and Assembly. But there was a big push at the time in the automotive business to become more competitive because we were having a tough time being competitive in the marketplace, global marketplace for vehicles. So it was actually then that we partnered with a company called Nishoku. It's a Taiwanese multinational company. And they were actually, their claim to fame was really, they were probably one of the first manufacturers for Apple. So we had the original Apple iPods that they made the housings and the plastic for. Well, it was with them that I had the vision to actually manufacture trim, interior trim, and lighting in Taiwan, and then eventually China and Vietnam, and actually import back to or export to America for the automotive makers. Some people had some resistance to the idea, but at the time it was a matter of what some would say sink or swim. Either you became much more competitive in the marketplace, spent a lot more capital to automate, which wasn't really available at that time, or find another supply chain that could fulfill it. So we did all the design. AGM did all the design, the development, the prototyping, and the manufacturing and assembly, some in the United States, for lighting products. It was our first lighting project was for Nissan, and we expanded that to handles, interior grab handles for the vehicle, and then eventually some electronics, overhead consoles, control panels, and expanded the company to roughly about, we were probably at about $385 million in sales by the time we sold the company.
All right. In 2018, you become the CEO of Apex Corporation. Talk to us about Apex, please.
Well, Apex was really came about because I had retired based on a couple of factors. One was we had sold the company, AGM, to a larger entity. And that was also a national, international company. And it was actually at the same time, Jack, that I was diagnosed with a stage 4 appendiceal cancer, a very rare cancer. And so I went into retirement. I started feeling better. And I ended up getting actually a little bored. So I ended up starting the company called Apex to actually produce lighting again, mostly lighting for the exterior this time, not the interior.
With this push to electric vehicles that we're in the middle of, mm-hmm. how is that going to affect the use and the need for lighting going forward?
Actually, it's probably very good timing for the lighting in the marketplace. What we're going to you're going to start seeing more and more of is more brand identity. So you may start to see it now. Mustang has a vehicle. The what we call the Chevy bow tie. The front and rear has a nameplate. In this case, for GM, we have the bow tie. Traditionally, those have never been lighted. So now we're actually putting light in a very narrow, very thin package and actually lighting the logos up as in the evening. So you have a daytime and a nighttime. The nighttime it's actually lighted. So you can see now you're actually displaying the brand and night at the nighttime and getting a lot more brand awareness. We're seeing that as we shift to autonomous vehicles. We're actually looking at different lighted emblems and name badges that will actually be different colors. So if someone's driving in autonomous mode, electric mode, the light would be possibly a different color on the exterior of the vehicle. So someone that's driving next, you could see if the car's in autonomous mode or as actually someone driving the vehicle. But the interior, because LED is so popular, it doesn't draw a lot of voltage, amperage. So you're going to see a lot more LED lighting in the vehicle and on the exterior of the vehicle.
All right. You mentioned a couple minutes ago that in 2014, you got cancer. You had sudden abdominal pain. You thought you needed an appendectomy. And then they tell you, Mr. Granata, you have cancer. What was your initial reaction, Bob?
Yeah, it was certainly one of shock. I thought I was going in just for a simple appendectomy. It was actually the day after one of the Black Tie Auto Show events. And I went in just to get checked. It felt like something, a pain in that where the appendix was. And sure enough, it was. But at that time, appendix cancer was quite rare. It's actually only affected 7 out of 1 million people. And so most doctors in the medical community did not know how to really treat appendiceal cancer. Regretfully, by the time they caught it, I was already staged a 4C with a terminal prognosis of about 3 months to live.
All right. They tell you, Bob, you've got 3 months to live. Get your affairs in order. make peace with our Heavenly Father. How did you react to that?
Well, you know, it was first thing that occurred to me was my daughters. I had daughters that were just getting through high school. My eldest was just accepted to Vanderbilt University. And I just said, well, that's impossible. I can't accept that news. And I won't accept it weighing down for certain once I get out of here. And so I went on a very aggressive hunt, looking at all different technologies, whether it was naturopathic ideas, you know, curcumins and turmeric and mistletoe injections, and also did conventional chemotherapy. But at the end of the day, they developed a doctor named Dr. Sugarbaker, developed a procedure called HIPEC, stands for hyperthermic intraperitoneal chemotherapy, where they actually perfused hot chemotherapy within the abdominal cavity to eradicate any cancer that's floating around in your peritoneum, which is the space in and around your inner organs below your diaphragm. So the troublesome part about this cancer, Jack, was that it wasn't just tumor rate. Although you could have tumor masses, it was more of a mucinous fluid, cancerous fluid, which you just by opening, you couldn't just take out. Like, it was unlike taking a tumor out. It was completely covering the inside of the abdominal cavity. So they perfused the hot chemo to actually kill or eradicate the cancer. It's a very invasive. After my surgery, I come to learn the word MOAS, M-O-A-S, the mother of all surgeries. And sure enough, that it lived up to its name, because it certainly was. So I did my first HIPEC in 14. And regretfully, about a year and a half later, I recurred with some more mucin and tumors in my abdomen, and we did a second one. And these were all done in Pittsburgh, which they specialize in. David Bartlett was trained under Dr. Sugarbaker, and he performed both of my HIPEC surgeries. In this case, quite successfully, because I'm going on now, January will be, well, I'm actually 7.5 years in, so I far exceeded my 3-month prognosis, and it actually brought about a new calling for me, Jack.
Yes. We're talking to Bob Granata, who's a shining example of advocating for himself and taking the bulls by the horn and saying, I'm going to beat this. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula. We're with Bob Granata, and in 2014, he was diagnosed with stage 4C appendiceal cancer, an extremely rare form of cancer. Bob, if there's a listener tonight that just has heard those words, you've got cancer, they're feeling sorry for themselves, they're a victim, what do you say to him or her?
Well, the biggest lesson I've learned was you have to have hope. And I've seen, as you may know, I'm now fully engaged in developing an advocacy program for Dr. David Bartlett in Pittsburgh. And so most of my time advocating for the patients has been, mostly I advocate for patients that can't advocate for themselves, or have no one that can advocate for themselves. So surprisingly, 90-95% of the patients out there, cancer patients, don't have advocates or won't advocate for themselves. Which typically when I start to mentor some of these folks, I know pretty immediately whether they're going to have the fire in the belly to beat this thing. And it can be beaten. And as you know, from my case, so it's a matter of hope. It's a matter of finding the right doctor. A lot of doctors would purport to do manage, you know, surgical procedures of this nature, but because this is so specific, you have to have a specialist. So your best time is spent finding the specialist that has the most experience.
You're a shining example of a person that took on a huge challenge, beat it, and is making a terrific difference for a lot of lives. And you become an expert in the miracle we know as light. Talk to us about the miracle of light.
Well, you know, as we know, light's been around a long time. And one of the things that we start to recognize is that, you know, the benefits of light, most of the medical community, certainly they recognize light as being an effective tool to fight different maladies. But it's simple as, like when we went through the pandemic, one of the things that most people could see if they looked hard enough is, you know, the rates of COVID, for example, was much lower in as the closer you got to the equator. As you went north, and as we enter the seasons of gray, dark, cold temperatures, the COVID rates started to increase. So it all became mostly a part of the lack of vitamin D in your system, which is generated by light. Well, we've worked with a partner in the past that we worked to develop a product that could actually use light, varying wavelengths of light, to actually bring blood flow, and then also essentially oxygen, and starts to actually repair cells. So we've seen it actually has a regenerative effect on the body. That could be a knee sprain. It could be your collagen in your skin to make you tighten your skin. A lot of different effects light can actually bring to positive things that light can bring to the human body.
You guys have come up with something entitled Sunflower.
Yeah, the Sunflower unit. Right now, we've actually working on a new project. We've kind of slowed down the mass market of it to work on some effectiveness for the dementia market, and so they're doing some early studies to see the effects of light in treating dementia. So it's really much too early to say where we're at in those results. But we do believe that light will have a positive effect on people that are experiencing early symptoms of dementia.
You've got a bit of Elon Musk in you. Not as many zeros, but just about making money. You're about doing good and helping other people. So Elon Jr., where did you get that from?
Well, I think it's my experience, Jack. I think it's I really believe that my illness is probably what changed me. I wouldn't say for the better, but changed me it became my new calling. And as I mentioned, the hospital system I'm associated with, well, I originally came back to Michigan from Pittsburgh and started help fund the HIPEC department, or start a HIPEC department at Beaumont Hospital here in Southeast Michigan. It got kind of caught up in some bureaucracy, in my opinion, maybe some not such strong leadership. And I ended up going back to Dr. Bartlett, which at that time was at UPMC, University of Pittsburgh Medical Center. He just took over as the chief of Allegheny Health Network in Pittsburgh. And he's actually, and we had a I had a patient, a guy that actually I'm written up in a book called Radical Hope, that found my name in a book called Radical Hope. It's people that have survived cancer through radical means. And he looked me up. We talked. He said one of the major hospital systems in Texas told him that there was nothing they could do for him, and he was 38, and he'd have to prepare for the inevitable. I hooked him up with Dr. Bartlett at AHN, and he took him on his surgery, and he's done quite well, actually. But it was really more importantly, it was the question I had for Dr. Bart was, I went back to see Dr. Bart and I said, you know, here's my experience when I was with you at UPMC. And I said, here's what I think you need to fix. And he said, well, can you help me? And so I said, sure, I can help you. As long as we're on the same page going forward, with new technologies, new clinical trials, state-of-the-art surgery methods, I'd be happy to. So I developed an ambassador advocacy group where I now have a group of 8 people around the U.S. that are the folks that are helping others walking down this path. And it was when I started seeing real concrete evidence of successes where they had no hope, it really re-energized me.
Talking to Bob Granata, and I'm Jack Fasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR.
Jack Krasula, host of WJR's Anything Is Possible, the weekly radio visit, brings his 15 years of inspirational storytelling to hardcover. With God, anything is possible.
Anything is possible.
15 of Jack's more than 750 tales of defeating odds and achieving the extraordinary. Like Bob Woodruff, whose job covering the war in Iraq nearly cost him his life. And Nick Vujicic, the limbless evangelist who has stunned millions with his message of acceptance and grace. With God, anything is possible. Order now while signed copies are still available at trustinusllc.square.site. That's trustinusllc.square.site. And as Jack says,
make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohom. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible. And we're talking to Bob Granata. And in 2018, he became the CEO of Apex Corporation. Bob, you are a quintessential entrepreneur. Talk to us about entrepreneurs. What do they have in successful ones? What do they have in common?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I've had this conversation recently with some younger folks. That I said, you know, basically, what do you want to do when after you graduate? What are you going to go to school for? What are you going to do when you want to graduate? And I've heard many, many times that people said, hey, I want to be an entrepreneur. And I said, okay, I think it's good. It's good to be an entrepreneur. But, you know, there's more to it than just saying you want to be an entrepreneur. It's really more of an innate, my feeling, it's more of an innate quality and drive. And so you're really blending a lot of creativity. So I asked a lot of the young folks that asked me that question. I said, well, what is it you want to be an entrepreneur of? Is it a product? Is it a service? What is it you're thinking? Well, I don't know yet, but I want to be an entrepreneur, because there's a certain, you know, people think, oh, entrepreneurs make a lot of money. Well, you know, with opportunity becomes risk, right? So you have to have a much higher risk tolerance than most. You have to be ready to go many years without any type of salary or money, and as you try to launch your idea. And some people aren't prepared to do that. They're like, hey, I want to work, I want to make money. And so it's a really a balance of risk, creativity, certainly drive, timing. You know, I think in many cases I've been very blessed by good timing, being at the right place, right time. Listening, you know, listening and not talking. You know, a lot of people talk, and few people really listen to what their customer wants or the consumer wants. And you know, and that's how you got to really, that's how you develop the next best product.
I've heard it said that an entrepreneur gets to decide which 16 hours a day he or she wants to toil.
That's true, right? Yeah, your days are very long, and then in many cases, longer. My first couple years into my international model, I spent 250, 260 days a year just traveling, you know, meeting the people, meeting, shaking the right hands, getting to know the right government folks to get things approved. And so they are certainly very long hours, long days, long years. And sometimes we're also met with a lot of issues and challenges that sometimes are not, if you want everyone, it'd be great, but you don't win everyone, you know, some fall in place, some don't.
We're talking to Bob Granata. If you want to learn more, www.eypex.com, eypex.com. In today's world, Bob, you have to keep learning while you're earning. Talk about that. An entrepreneur has to be a lifelong learner.
Yeah, I think it still goes back to what I said just earlier, is that it's a lot of listening and then trying to figure out what is it the consumer wanted or the customer wanted. And then it's a matter of getting the right people in the room, right? The right people in the right room. Like, I don't know. Clearly, we don't know everything, so you got to make sure you have the ability to choose the right team with the right experience and the right knowledge. And then it's a matter of making sure that team gels really well to meet your ultimate objective.
A lot of entrepreneurs reach a certain level and never can exceed that level. They can't learn to give up. They can't learn to get better people than themselves. Talk about the challenges of scaling a business.
Yeah. So let me see where I go with that. That, you know, the issue becomes certainly what we do know. I used to be a kind of a person that would want to just do it all myself, right? Because I knew I can get it done faster. I knew I can do it effectively. But I learned, I did learn shortly thereafter that you can't be all for everybody. We wore many different hats. We still wear many hats. We could be the CEO, or we could certainly be, the production worker at times, you know, whatever it takes to get the job done. But it's really finding the people that share the same passion you do to be a success. I always used to say, and a lot of people say it, is, you know, you really, if it was really simple, everybody would do it, right? And most people really don't, they want to find the path of least resistance. So they just naturally levitate away from risk, the risk-reward formula.
You've been at this for decades. Ross Perot had many sayings, one of which was, it's a funny thing about people, how often when they get successful, they quit doing the very things that made them successful. You keep doing that. How do you do it?
Yeah, I mean, people would tell me after my illness that, when I retired, what are you doing going back into business? You can retire comfortably. You could go sit on the beach. And the follow-up question is, you know, what is your hobbies? And I said, and this is probably a negative thing, but I do have hobbies, but really my hobby is my business. And so I get a lot of pleasure out of doing business and maybe bringing a product to fruition. So it really, it's almost like it's got to be your hobby. You know, you got to stick with it, just like what you do with a hobby.
The statement, success is a journey, not a destination. Talk about that, if you will.
I would say that's probably a very good quote. If it is a quote, I'm not sure who quoted it, but It is a journey, and it's a journey really. You can certainly choose to stop, end your journey at one spot or not, but I think a true entrepreneur continues to look for a new opportunity. It's like, why don't they have this? Well, I can make that, and we can, you know, people could be happy with that, and we could sell a lot of that. So it's, your mind is kind of always in a in motion.
All right. Speaking of new challenges, mm-hmm. you're in the middle of setting up a vocational program as we speak. Talk about that.
Well, I was in the process, Jack. It was it was met with a lot of disappointment, actually. I cut my teeth originally in the tooling business and representing mold makers, a very good company called Proper International. And we made tools and molds. And what we noticed is, what I've noticed is that everybody's recruiting students to go to college. And what I do know is college is not for everybody. So we're pushing children out of school, out of the high schools, and saying you have to go to college. And many aren't cut from that cloth. So, but instead, they're not pushing them into the vocational trades. So if you look at vocational trades, let's call it mold making in this case. What is, you know, who's gonna be the mold makers of the world and produce products, that technical products? And it's a big challenge because most of the people are retiring right now. So it's going to push us, it's going to push a lot of people overseas to get tooling made, fixtures, gauges, tooling, molds, stamping dies. And that creates a big challenge for a lot of us. For the country's security is one. We're losing our key advantages, which was being a manufacturing driven country.
Brenata, you are a shining example of taking the challenges that the Lord gives us and turning them into terrific things to help yourself and other people. Keep up the great, great work.
Thank you, Jack. It's a pleasure speaking with you this morning.
Please join us again next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Brasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible.
Believe in yourself.